This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 38. Pongoed out the park. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the next 50 years of limited overs cricket. We get joined on the line from Australia and New Zealand with the Roy Davey and Malcolm Ellis of Willows Cricket Club. We answer your questions on left arm pace bowling, midway actions, and how fast you need to bowl as a spinner. And Berners has another fantastic soapbox. All that and more on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing and coaching better cricket. And I am David Hinchliffe. I am the chief czar of all things Pitch Vision cricket coaching. And alongside me on the show this week is the man who, if he doesn't know about cricket, it's not worth knowing. It's Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garras.
Welcome, mate. Good to be here, as always, and good intro. Thank you very much. Always a good head boost for me whenever you give me an intro like that.
And, of course, as always, alongside Garras is the ever-faithful Berners doing his bit for Pitch Vision. How are you today, Berners?
Great, thank you. Not quite such a glamorous broadcast of my skills, but I'll take it, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, you have a unique skill set, Berners, that we couldn't do without. So every time you are away doing something else, there's a Berners-sized gap in the podcast, and we don't like that.
I appreciate that. The love is beaming through.
And also joining us on the line for the first time, all the way from Melbourne, Australia, which I guess is a long way for me, but not very long for him. It's Roy Davey, who is bowling development coach at Knox Gardens Cricket Club. Welcome along to the show, Roy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's a privilege and an honour.
It's great to have somebody who is moving into their summer on the show, because everyone else on the show is sad and depressed that the weather is turning colder and the cricket is drawing to a close. So you can keep the excitement up, the potential up, and the excitement up with us.
Yeah, I hope so.
So I wanted to have a look back, and by looking back, have a look forward as well this week, because very recently I noted that it's been 50 years since the first ever limited over professional final, the old Gillette Cup final, when fields were set like three-day fields. Everyone was in whites, and cricket was played at 20 overs an hour. It's changed a lot in the last 50 years, hasn't it, Garrett?
Well, I can't remember back to 50 years ago. I'm not that old, but you're right. It has changed a heck of a lot. And actually, if you look at those early days and look at the likes of Jeff Boycott, I think, played a match-winning role in the first ever final, or one of the first finals, scoring at about one and over. So, it has moved on hell of a lot. And as you say, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes in the next 50 years as well. It'll take a brave man to make accurate predictions on that one, I reckon.
Well, I agree with you, and I'll tell you why I think that's the case. It's because the pace of change seems to be accelerating. It's, you know, it used to be the case that things would step forward every 10 years, maybe every 5 years, but it seems now that things are stepping forward every 6 months, let alone every year.
T20's got a lot to answer for the changes in, I guess, the limited overs game, the 50 over game. When it first started, you know, like Gareth was saying, you know, Boycott scoring at one and over compared to now, you're up around five or six constantly and consistently. So, yeah, I think, you know, 2020's got a lot to sort of play in that role over the last sort of 5 years of that.
Do you think the expectations of the way that the game is played has changed at the type of level that you coach at?
Three of our first four games are all one, you know, for 40 over games here. But our coaches, you know, ever saying, you know, 3 to 4 runs and over is, you know, minimum what we should be scoring in those 40 overs. So, and I think that puts a lot of pressure on, you know, the batsmen to make sure that they're consistently up at that run rate.
Yeah, it puts pressure on the groundsman to make more batting-friendly pitches so that the scores can go up, and it puts pressure on the bowlers to make sure that they can execute their skills under somebody with a great big plank of wood trying to smash them over long on.
You generally find, yeah, in a 40-over game, any score sort of above 160 in local cricket is going to be pretty good. But having said that, I've seen teams make, you know, 250, almost 300 runs in the first game of the season. So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, interesting to see what happens next week.
Going down to club level as well, a lot of people believe what they see on the TV. So you often see, you know, at the professional level, they go quite hard and they've got a high, you know, very strategic approach with in the early stages with the power play. And as you just explained there, the pitches and the outfields essentially are, you know, far greater and far more consistent in terms of quality at the higher level. So kids and players at home see these expansive shots, they see the high scoring, and they're trying to emulate that out on a, you know, a Saturday at your local grade club, or even, you know, Premier Division grounds here aren't that great. And, you know, you can't perform in the same way that those guys do on the big screen.
That is an interesting point about scores going up and how things are changing at the professional level, Gareth. How do you filter that down to players who aren't playing at professional level and consider how average scores are changing at club level, at school level, at academy level?
Well, I think they are changing. They're probably not changing at the consistency of them isn't changing, I would suggest, but that you do see much higher scores even in club cricket now, you know. And if we were taking ourselves back 20 years ago and we were chasing down 300 in a 50 over game, you'd think you were completely out of the game. And in fact, I remember my first ever one day game. We were playing against Gloucestershire, and I was asked to predict the score with 10 overs to go, you know, what it was going to end up at. And I reckon that we were going to go for 50 off of the last 10 overs, which we ended up going for. But nowadays, you wouldn't even dream of that, would you? I mean, you'd be looking at eight minimum. And that happens in club cricket as well. We had two scores chased down at school last year that were 300 plus in 50 over cricket, and equally in 2020 cricket, 200 was reached on a regular basis. So I think it does happen. I think the parameters of people's thinking and the extent that you can reach now is much bigger. But I totally accept that the consistency of those scores happening is going to be less, and a lot of that is down to lack of practice time in relation to the professionals, and also the conditions that Berners mentioned earlier as well being slightly different. So you will. We'll get those, and the game has moved on, and people's mindsets have moved on. You know, scoring 200 in a 50-over game is now on, isn't it, for somebody, if they bat all the way through, whereas it used to be that if you got 100, you won the game, or somebody got 100, they won the game. So things have moved on now, which is only a good thing. But the question that I pose going forward is, how do we redress the balance between bat and ball?
I was going to ask that to you next, actually. So how do we do that?
Well, I'm going to ask a bowler. Come on then, bowlers.
Make the bat smaller.
Stumps bigger.
They're like, oh yeah, the stumps bigger. They're like tree trunks now. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the way it is. And I'm just wondering, you know, what can be done by administrators to try and redress that balance? Because, you know, the 160 game that we were talking about earlier, that Roy was talking about, is a good game, isn't it? You know, and some of the best 50-over games or 40-over games as we've had over in the UK in the last few years in county cricket have been those low-scoring games where there's been a bit of intrigue. I think we need to get some more of those games being played. And the only way that I can think, because you can't change the ball, we've obviously got two new balls at each end, which could have an advantage for a bowler, but actually a lot of the time has an advantage for a batter because it goes off the bat quicker. Is whether there's an option to stop using the everybody, you know, five bowlers at 10 overs apiece in 50-over cricket and go back to a time where you've got the opportunity for a bowler to bowl, say, 13 overs. So your best bowler gets more of an opportunity to take wickets potentially. But that off the top of my head is the only way that we can do something about it, because otherwise, you know, people are just going to get pongoed out of the park. And I worry about future generations of fast bowlers, and because we need to motivate these guys to want to do it. And if you're going to get smacked a lot, then, you know, that's not going to motivate people.
Well, here's to the next 50 years. And let's wrap up our introduction with a yes, no round. Roy, you're welcome to chip in with your answer. Just so you know, you can only say yes or no to the statement that Berners makes, and myself and Gareth will also chip in with our yes or no, but it doesn't matter how much more you want to say, you can only say yes or no. So, Berners, what are the three yes-no round questions this week?
First question, teamwork is about knowing your role.
Yes.
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 Second question, when you win the toss, bat.
No.
Yes.
Ooh.
No.
Third question, nice guys can't be tough guys.
No.
Yes.
No.
Oh, controversy reigns.
Occasionally on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we like to bring in a different voice, somebody who is doing progressive and interesting things in the game of cricket, and there's no different this week, as I am talking to Malcolm Ellis, who is on the management committee of Willows Cricket Club in New Zealand. Welcome to the show, Malcolm.
Nice to have you in our part of the world for a change, out in the Antipodes.
Yeah, well, we spend as much time in Australia and New Zealand as we can. We love it there on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You are looking after things at a cricket club with a very clear philosophy. And can you tell us a little bit more about how that works at Willows?
Yeah, well, the Willows Cricket Club, it's in North Canterbury. It's in Lowburn in North Canterbury, which is about a half an hour's drive northwest of Christchurch. And the club was set up 20-odd years ago to encourage players in the secondary school first 11s to play against players who have had experience in the game, players who have been present or first-class players, and to offer quality cricket to cricket lovers in what we call it's a country atmosphere where families and come along and watch and enjoy the day of cricket. So it's all about just letting the young people in the game who are coming into the game of cricket understand what cricket is all about. It's not just all about what goes on in that 22 yards out in the middle, but part of the history and part of the folklore of the game and some of the ethos of the game of cricket. So it's all about learning and encouraging young people to learn about the great traditions of the game of cricket.
And cricket develops very quickly. It changes all the time. There's new formats coming in, new ways of playing, new shots, new slower balls that have come up with. But what I like about the philosophy of the Willows is that overarching all that is the spirit of the game, the philosophy of the game, which even though cricket's changed so much in the last 60, 20, 10, even 5 years, that philosophy hasn't changed much at all, and you're still flying the flag for that.
Absolutely. The game of cricket will change, and it changes with the dynamic of the culture of the people coming through at a particular point in time. But there are basic principles about the ethos of the game of cricket that was established 150, 200 years ago, all those things that have rolled on over the years and have become embedded in the folklore of cricket, are the things that we want to ensure endure here. It's not a difficult concept, but it's all about letting young people who've never experienced that before appreciate some of the nice things, not just about what goes on out in the middle, but the nice things surrounding the whole game of cricket. And it's all about turning up to the ground, turning up properly attired, turning up with a collar and tie, turning up with your clothes properly presented, turning up so you're not a mishmash of colours. You're part of a team, and you're part of a team when you come play cricket at the Willows.
And then senior players, the young players will play up against senior players, some with great experience, and then afterwards they will be able to speak to those players in an informal environment and learn some things off the field as well as on the field.
Well, Sir Richard Hadlee is a classic illustration of that. Sir Richard's father, Walter, who played cricket for New Zealand and played on some great tours to England, he is our patron in perpetuity. Sir Walter, of course, Walter is passed away now, but he is our patron in perpetuity, and his son Sir Richard is one of the greatest cricketers the world's ever seen. He's a member there, and the likes of him and Shane Bond and Craig McMillan are some of the players that just turn up there regularly to play on a Sunday against some of these kids. In some instances, it's playing with them, beside them in the same teams. And at the end of the game, those players with first-class experience, with international experience, will sit beside these players inside the boundary and talk about those things that are important to us cricket lovers that these youngsters may not understand and may not have ever seen. They just bring in those, not necessarily the getting the greatest wicket taker in the game in New Zealand. Not all about highlights, but it's about that underlying ethos of the game of cricket, just to let these young people know that they are part of a huge tradition in sport, and that sport is the game of cricket.
Well, this show is as much about tradition as it is about progressiveness. You know, we talk about the spirit of the game as much as we talk about iPads and coaching tools. So, Malcolm, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much for explaining that part of the game is still alive and well, and there's still people who are ready to talk about the traditions of the game in a positive light.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Time now for the mailbag. Two questions sent in to the show, two questions answered, and the best of which wins a prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Berners, you're poised with the mailbag there. What's the first question that you've got for us?
Well, first question is in from Tej, and he's a left-arm pace bowler, and he's saying that his bowling action is only a semi-action. So he just wants to know, is a semi-bowling action okay? And does he need to be a fully open chest bowler? Also, he wants to increase his pace. So that's off a very frequent question, but he's asking a few bits and bobs around the old left arm quickie here. So over to you guys.
The key part of that question for me is not to do with increasing pace, because that's something that we've discussed a lot on the show, although we can tie it in. Is a halfway between sideways and front on bowling action okay? Okay, I guess, can fall into two areas. Okay, as in, will it allow him to generate the maximum amount of speed, is part one. And part two is, okay, will it cause him any kind of injuries? Part two, I would say that as long as you are lined up, you know, we all know about the mixed bowling action where the shoulders and the hips aren't correctly lined up. But as long as you're lined up in a midway bowling action, then you are going to be as safe as you can be for any kind of torque on the spine. And in terms of speed, Ian Pont once told me that theoretically, a side-on bowler could bowl better, faster than a midway bowler or a front-on bowler, purely because of the physics of you can bring your hip round more, and therefore the more you can bring your hip round, the more power you can generate, and the faster the ball can come out. But that's theoretical. There's been plenty of midway quick bowlers, and there have been good examples of front-on fast bowlers. So I wouldn't worry too much about where your action is, whether it's midway, side-on or front-on, if pace is the main concern.
I mean, being a left-arm opening bowler myself, when I was playing, I was a lot more side-on, but I was taught at a young age, you're either side-on or front-on. There's no sort of midway, because that's where the majority of injuries are going to occur. So I developed to be more side-on, and obviously, by that, my pace was generally a lot quicker than someone that was more fully open chest. So as long as everything's lined up, there shouldn't be an issue with injuries or anything like that.
And where are you with this, Gareth?
Well, it all depends on how much, how do you pronounce his name? Chibasi, is that right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure myself.
It all depends on how much Tej has been coached, because as Roy just said, you know, we've generally, going back to the time when we played, you were either sideways on or you were front on. But for somebody who hasn't had much coaching, and I'm speculating here, but say you haven't had much coaching, Tej, then what you probably do is settle into an action which suits your body. So to me, I'd keep doing what you're doing. In ways of increasing your pace, you know, we talk about that on a regular basis on the show, obviously. And the ways to increase your pace ultimately are to get yourself strong so you can transfer all your momentum up from the ground and into the ball most effectively. But if you've not been coached to bowl with this semi-bowling action or a midway or whatever you call it, then that's probably the action that your body is best to do. And I'm just going to be a bit contentious here, gents, because I'm doing a bit of research at the moment into back injuries and stuff. And there's a few anomalies that are coming out. And I'm going to give you the example of Jimmy Anderson. ECB are presently talking about the fact that most of the body weight, sort of anywhere between sort of 6 to 8, 9 times the body weight, goes through front foot contact. So they talk about alignment being crucial at the point of front foot contact through to release, rather than talking about mixed actions, which we did 10 years ago.
Which is back foot contact, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, back foot contact's largely irrelevant in their view. And I'd subscribe to a lot of that view, because you're only putting 2.5 times your body weight through your action. The second bit of it is around some of the research that we're doing with these two guys that I've mentioned, who have had a look at the way that human movement patterns work within various different people based on personality. So somebody like Jimmy Anderson had a very natural bowling action, came into the England setup, and within the England setup was encouraged to bowl very biomechanically correct, where they aligned everything and got his head over the top of his torso and kept his arms in tight as per all of the biomechanical manuals that you see going around. And within 3 months of that happening, he started to have back injuries. And within 5 months of it, he was taken off bowling and had the start of a stress fracture. He came back and he made the decision himself just to bowl like he wanted to bowl. And the rest is history. So going back to a question about alignment, I don't necessarily agree that everybody needs to be aligned. I think people need to bowl with the way that their bodies need to bowl. And that's where coaching comes in, because we're given all of this information, which is very sound and being scientifically backed up. But we still need to then apply that into every individual. Otherwise, we would never get people like an Andre Nell, who had a train crash of an action in terms of biomechanics, but bowled 40 overs every day for the whole of his life. So that's, I'm just chucking that in as a little aside.
So hopefully we've got you some way towards an answer there. Tedges, what's the next question, Berners?
The next question comes in from Tom. He's a spinner, and he's asking, how do you know if you bowl too slowly? As a spinner, can you bowl too slowly? That's how I get all my wickets.
Chuck it up there, moonball.
Moonball. Pull the pin out. Eyes light up and they heave it straight down mid-off throat. And if it's a full toss, all the better, because they hit it higher. It's the same outcome. They're heading back to the pavilion.
I was lucky enough to work with and listen to a lot, a couple of really good bowling coaches, spin bowling coaches, one being Terry Jenner. And Terry Jenner used to say that the right pace to bowl is the pace that you get your maximum amount of break off of the wicket. And he was very, very precise in using the word break, because he used to talk about spin being something that happened in the air and break being what happened off of the pitch. So he used to say that your first 2 overs are your finding out phase in terms of that particular pitch or the way that your body is operating at any given point to get that maximum amount of break off of that bit of grass that you're trying to land the ball on. And I think that's a really sensible way of going about it. In more recent years, I've spent a bit of time with Bish and Betty, who talked with different language patterns, but exactly the same messages, you know, that you find out. And he would often start off slow and then put a couple of quicker balls in just to see what the reaction from the grass was going to be. And work his way from there. And when he found out which ball would grip more than others, then that would become his stop ball. And then obviously he would vary his pace to get different reactions off of it in terms of variations as he went through his spell. So the answer to your question is you'll find your own pace, and that pace will vary subtly from wicket to wicket that you're playing on. But really those first 10 balls or so, those first 2 overs are your time to find that out. The challenge, of course, is what we talked about earlier. is the imbalance in one day cricket and 2020 cricket between bat and ball. And often you're coming in and you're bowling your first couple of overs and you're not actually looking to find your ideal pace. You're just looking to get out of the over and to get back to your fielding position next over where you've only gone for four, five or six runs in that given over. So that's a real challenge. But those are the bits of advice that I've picked up over the years from two greats of spin bowling coaching.
Yeah, variation of pace is one of the most powerful tools that a spinner's got. You know, to be able to vary the amount, the time it takes for the ball to get to the same place is a really important way of deceiving batsmen. I guess you see at your level, Roy, that the bowling is a little bit slower than you might see at a professional level.
They flight it a lot more. So yeah, obviously you've got it is a little bit slower. But there are also those finger spinners and those dart spinners that'll, you know, dart the ball in and get a little bit of break. So you do get your variations. And, you know, growing up watching guys like Shane Warne from the time he started until the time he retired, he to me was just sort of reiterated what Terry Jenner was obviously coaching him, that it's about the break and sort of finding that consistency, I guess.
Consistency of variation, though, really, isn't it? In that you can adjust things,
yeah,
in many different ways. I remember seeing it was in a World Cup. I don't think it was in the last World Cup. Perhaps the World Cup before. Daniel Vittori bowling an over, which they then showed on the replay. All the balls in the over landed in pretty much the same spot, as close as you could get to the same spot. But every single one was a slightly different pace. So each one had a different amount of flight on it and a different amount of dip on it and a different amount of pace on it. But all the balls were landing on the same spot. And that's great control. And that's, especially at lower levels of cricket, that's going to get you a lot of wickets.
Well, that's variation, yeah, Isn't it? And that's brilliant bowling. And he's been, for somebody who hasn't spun the ball hugely or made the ball break off a pitch hugely over the last few years, he's still a really effective, particularly limited overs cricketer.
So the question is, have we answered that point from Tom about how do you know whether it's too slow? I guess experimentation.
You find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, experiment, find out.
Yeah, I guess that's the short answer. Okay, that's a good place to leave those questions behind, and we can head off into the newsroom where Daisy Cutter is waiting for us with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you, guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. In a successful week for cricket coaching technology, the ICC Academy in Dubai are updating Pitch Vision to the latest underfloor version. The custom installation will not only be used for coaching cricketers, but also a way to help elite umpires improve their skills in tracking where the ball has pitched. This means it will be the most accurate Pitch Vision system ever built for those very tight calls. Who are the serious strike bowlers on Pitch Vision Interactive? We ran a special filter report based on the standard played by bowlers to find the best, and it fired out just three names. Charlin, with a strike rate of 11.11, was top of the pile. But also in the pack following was Joe Kirton from South Africa with 22.23, and Englishman Ashley with 22.38. With the next best strike rate trailing away significantly, these guys are the cream of the future talent. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision News for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
So, Berners is poised on the soapbox. He's got a rant. He's been travelling the world. He's got something to say. He's got 60 seconds to say it. No interruptions. Berners, your time starts now.
Doing the job I do, I often frequent some of the world's finest academies and some of the poorest. One thing that has come into my mind a lot of the time on visiting these facilities is that they basically do not get used, them being high level facilities, those out in Dubai where they've got various pitches and soil imported from all over the world, to local recreational nets. They're often unpopulated, and I often feel that when you look at other sports, the way in which guys generate revenues and make things interactive and more fun and just get bodies involved in playing cricket, there's a lot more you can do. And I think Dubai was a prime example. You know, you're going to Dubai that don't really even play cricket, and they've got the finest academy, finest facilities in the world, which were pretty much redundant. Why can't we get that in England, Australia, South Africa, and the places that play the game and really kickstart things from these kind of focal learning locations? So yeah, get in the academies, get some marketing around them, and get playing cricket.
Okay, that is the end of the show, but as is traditional, of course, there's a couple of things that we need to sort out before we go. The main one being, of course, who had the best question of the week? Gareth gets to decide who wins the prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Tej's question about his semi-bowling action, and we had Tom's question about bowling pace when you're a spinner. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to have to go for Tej this week, purely based on the fact we had a great discussion. He's got a great name, and also he's talked about semi-bowling actions as well, which makes me chuckle. So that's where I've gone this week, and that's the rationale. Tom, just experiment with your paces, mate. Hopefully that's going to be a worthy enough prize for your question. But Tej's come away with it this week.
So, Berners, if someone out there with an unusual name or with a plain name has got a question and they feel like it's going to be a good one and they want to get it answered and they want to win that prize, how would they get in touch with the show?
They can give us a call. The number here is +44 for any listeners from around the world, 203-239-7543. Or also, it's really easy to email from anywhere around the world, and that is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yeah, you can call us on Skype. It's a good rate. That's my sales spiel for Skype, although they are not a sponsor. And you can also get in touch with us using Facebook. If you head over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and if your question is 140 characters or less, why not use Twitter? Pitchvisionacad is where we hang out there. And if you want to subscribe to the show, of course, you can do so by using iTunes. Just head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and all the magic happens there by clicking the subscribe button. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you use something else, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. And the details of the RSS feed are in there for whatever podcatching program that you use. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Roy.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, fellas. Tej's, you come away with it this week.
And Tom, I would recommend experimenting with your name as well if you're going to submit another question. Gareth always leans towards the more exciting name. So if you can come up with maybe a nickname, maybe you've got an interesting middle name, then that's going to give you more chance of winning that prize.
I think that's very harsh that you've belittled me like that.
There's currently an investigation taking place under Mark Garraway's choice of competition winner. I've heard he's got links into India and all the rest of it.
Correlations between name and prize giving.
No comment.